first aliyah of Parshas Bo. So Parshas Bo takes us into the last three makos, and it's often been commented that Bo is a gematria of three, but there's other comments also made about the word Bo and what we can derive from that choice of words. But the truth is, even before we get to that, which is the name of the parsha, so that's early enough to start with, but we could even comment on Vayomer. Vayomer, you might think, is an interesting word choice to start the parsha, because we got harsh stuff going on, and we have a tradition that Vayomer is a softer language, Lashon Raka, and that Vayidaber is usually the harsher language. So the Or HaChaim comments on this choice, so why we have the kind of more cheerful Vayomer. And he has two suggestions. He says maybe because the focus here is to Moshe, and Moshe appreciates seeing the Nikmas Hashem here, seeing Hashem's point be expressed. So we're not looking at it through Paro's lens. Or he suggests that maybe even from a Paro perspective, there is still the Rachmanis, that there is a warning first. So therefore, even from that angle, there is some softness to appreciate, so maybe Vayomer is still the appropriate term. But what about Bo? So many comment that you would think that it should say Lech El Paro, that it has a connotation of come, the word Bo, and if you're sending somebody on a mission, shouldn't you say go? So nobody suggests the answer is that we already have a parsha called Lech, so that's not apparently an acceptable approach to this question. But there are other approaches. Many suggest that this is Akash Baruch is saying that I'm coming with you, and that this is to reassure Moshe that he is concerned about his oratory, about his ability to be convincing, as the Maram Shik points to the Medrash and the Zohar. They quote the Pasuk in Tehillim, Hashem Vor Panecha Yaleichun, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying, I will be with you, so you don't have to worry about how convincing you will be. Others suggest other nuances in terms of the language, that it doesn't necessarily mean the way we would say in English, that Lech is go somewhere else and Bo is come here. So, for example, the Medrash that notes that when Paro was in his castle, so the Torah uses the language of Bo, and when he was outside of the city, so the language is Lech. And it's just a question of Cheshivas, that there's a greater stature and a greater dignity that comes along with the word Bo. So when Paro is in his royal setting, so that is the word that is used. And others also maybe focus on the dignity, that Moshe shouldn't come looking like a supplicant, he shouldn't come looking like he has to be subservient to Moshe, he should come with a sense of self-confidence. The Tosfos HaShalom understands it to mean that he shouldn't wait for Paro to summon him. Clearly, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling him to go. He's not waiting for him. But there could perhaps be other connotations as well. Others understand it that it reflects the nature of the mission, that Lech would mean go there and bring back something. But here it's not about getting a response. So it's just about come to him and bring him a message, and therefore the language is appropriate for that perspective. The Netziv in his commentary, where he's addressing what exactly is to be accomplished by this mission, which itself is a subject of discussion. You know, Rashi fills in the words here, because it's not really explicit to the Pasuk. Pasuk just tells us, V'yomer Hashem Moshe Bo al Paro. What are you supposed to do there? Ki ani libo v'yaslev avoda v'man shlisi osa sayel v'kirvo. So what are you doing when you're there? So Rashi fills in, v'hasrevo. You should warn him. Okay, so what's that going to accomplish? So the Netziv fills in that you shouldn't say that he's already muchzak, we already know that warning's not going to make a difference. This is understandably what's going to happen, and as the Pasuk suggests, that, and we'll talk more about this in a minute, that God is making this happen, but it's okay, Paro deserves it. But this is necessary now because of the osios, because of what the makos are going to convey. But also, as the pasuk a little bit later is going to fill in, if you look at pasuk Gimel for a second, it says, Ad mosai me'anta li'anos mi'panai. How long are you going to refuse li'anos mi'panai? So what does that mean? So you might think it means to respond. So the Targum has a language, liskanasa, is to submit, essentially, to the Ribono Shel Olam. As Rashi quotes this also, v'migzeras ani, in other words, to make yourself like a poor person. Me'anta li'anos li'os ani, v'shofo mi'panai. How come you, Paro, you're refusing to make yourself into somebody in a subservient kind of position towards the Ribono Shel Olam? So Rav Schwab has a comment about this, that he says that there is still the hope that Paro has a way out, that if he would take a whole different approach, if he would lower himself, if he would decide that he's going to assume a different stance rather than his defiance, so then he can still reverse things. And we have an approach that this is a big part of the chiyuv of Bakashas Mechila. We know that when it comes to Yom Kippur time, we find the Mishnah tells us that we have an obligation to ask for Mechila if we have wronged anyone, if we have committed any Averos Ben Adam L'Chavero. And there's a whole fascinating discussion whether one can get off the hook if you happen to know that the person who you offended, if they are mochel you without your asking, so then maybe you shouldn't have to ask. Let's say they go on a talk show and they tell the whole world that they're mochel you, or you know that they say the tefillah zaka before Yom Kippur, which declares you're mochel anybody who hurts you. So if you choose your victims carefully, you make sure only to insult people who say the tefillah zaka, or they say that nusach of Kriya Shema Lamita, where they say they're mochel everybody. So are you off the hook and you don't have to ask for mechila? So many poskim say no, there's a chiyuv to ask mechila no matter what. So why is that true? Why should you have to ask for mechila even if the person already forgives? So some explain that the whole notion of lowering yourself is a part of the tshuva process. And maybe we had an opportunity to remember, we talked about this a little bit in Kippur time. I guess perhaps we did. So lowering myself to repeat the point now is also a part of the tshuva. So if Paro was ready to do that, if Paro was ready to take that kind of an approach, so then that would have maybe changed things. Maybe that would have still been a path that would have been open to him. It's also interesting in this whole warning here is that first you have this statement, and the way it's addressed to Moshe, so what was next pasuk tells us, Laman tesaper ba'aznei vincha uven vincha, eis asher hisalalti b'mitzrayim, v'esos osoy asher samti v'am v'yidatem ki ani Hashem. So what does that mean? So that you should tell everyone the things that I have done to Mitzrayim, because I have done in Mitzrayim, and the signs that I have put in them, and it will be known that I am God. So far, we don't know yet what it is. Moshe is going to tell Paro that it's Arba, but that's not identified here. So, the Ramban has a comment that Moshe is told what it is by Remiza. So the Pasuk doesn't identify it explicitly yet. The Chassam Sofer has a fascinating comment. That the Chassam Sofer says he's a little hesitant to say this because it's kind of a radical idea. Says Lulei de Mistafina, was not hesitant to say such a thing. Maybe suggest that Moshe was given the job to actually decide what the makkah would be, and that it's not decided until Moshe comes and says that's what's going to happen. So that's really a fascinating concept, and it could be, as some svarim suggest, that maybe this correlates this whole language of hisalalti, which has an interesting connotation also. It kind of sounds like Kadosh Baruch Hu was playing with them, which is a difficult language to hear. It's not the attitude that we normally have. We know that when the Mitzrim drown at the sea, so we're told not to sing Shira, we don't want to rejoice, we don't want to be mocking. So this language of Hisalalti is unusual, and especially until now we've had an attitude that the Makos are about getting the Jews liberated. It's not about mocking the Mitzrim. So this is some of the Svarim suggest that could correlate to the point that Brisker Rav suggested, that this whole idea of Admosai that Paro has been refusing till now, there's an additional angle here that not only is Paro wrong for keeping the Jews enslaved, but he's also wrong for denying God's presence in the world and for going through all of these makos and not having any spiritual sensitivity. The Rambam says in Hilchos Tainius that it's a midah of achzarius, a midah of cruelty, to think that everything that happens, all the suffering in the world, is all b'mikreh, is all just nature. It's a very, very subtle point, because you know, we can also be very cruel sometimes when we try to interpret for other people why suffering happens, and that's one of the ways in which people are often particularly cruel, because they have their theories as to why other people are suffering. But on the other hand, you know, the Rambam says that to assume that there's no reason, that itself is an aspect of cruelty, just to think things happen. So a part of it is that it's not our job to be interpreting for other people, but when we suffer, so we have to try to figure out how can we respond in a meaningful way ourselves. So whatever it is, here Paro has been deaf to everything. Paro has not found any kind of a response within himself, and that requires its own kind of response. So now that's what's happening, that there needs to be something just to provoke a awareness within Paro that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is acting upon him. And maybe Moshe was given the authority, the discretion, to try to assess what's it going to take in order to do that, to be Mekadeshim Shemayim, to evoke an awareness within Paro that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking to him. There's a sefer called Shabbos HaMoedim, written by Reb Zev Freund. He has a discussion along these lines based on this Brisker Rav, this Sofer. He makes a point along these lines, trying to figure out what kind of an onesh, what kind of a reaction is appropriate in order to make Paro realize that not anymore about changing his behavior, but it's about being Mekadeshim Shemayim, about having this kind of an impact, and that's what's being inflicted at this point. So also the idea of Laman Tesaper is also an interesting kind of focus, that the idea that the Jews should talk about it, so you would think that that also isn't the purpose. You think we talk about it because it happened, not that it happened so we should talk about it. So sometimes also it's not clear to us what's the reason and what's the effect. And Mishkan Bethal, Sal Rudinsky from Muncie, has an essay about this. So sometimes we don't really appreciate that, you know, we think we talk about things because they happen, but they happen so that we can talk about them, so that we can have the Kiddush Hashem of appreciating what their impact is. And that's also a theme that we're going to have in the end of this parasha, or later in the parasha. We talk about the first mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, and we say that HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem, that we sanctify time. And sometimes we think that, okay, we have time, we might as well accomplish things. But really the point is that time exists so that we can accomplish things. Because we want to accomplish our purpose in life, time was created. And that's what Pesach comes to help us approach, help us appreciate. And the idea that Astaka Obaraisa Bar Alma, that God looked to the Torah and created the world to give us a context in which to fulfill the Torah, in which to be able to live out these values. Okay, but in any event, this idea that the Pasuk goes on to talk about, I think we alluded to last week in a different context. It came up. Forgot why it came up. But there is a major hashgafic theme that needs to be figured out here. The point going back to the first pasuk of Hichbadati as libo as leva vadav. So the idea that Paro's heart was hardened. So how is that consistent? How does that stem with the idea that is crucial and axiomatic to Jewish belief, the notion of free will? The assumption that we have control over our own decisions and our own actions, which is absolutely vital to our belief system and to the notion that God is just when he gives reward and punishment. So here the Torah is telling us explicitly and repeatedly that he's interfering, it seems, with human autonomy, with the ability to make decisions by weighing down on the heart of Paro and those around him. So clearly this creates a major philosophical question. And there are many fine discussions of this. I'm biased towards some of the discussions that appeared in our own publications, like a reference to the volume of Mitoch Ohel on the Parsha, where in Parshas Bo and B'Shalach there are fine articles on this topic by Rabbi Natanael Wiederblank and Dr. Shira Weiss. Some of what's written there I'll make mention of in the next few minutes. But there are a number of views in the Rishonim and in the Achronim to address this question. As you can imagine, it's a very major topic. How do we relate to this notion that the Pasuk can tell us that God is going to interfere with the ability to make decisions considering the fact that autonomy and free will is such a crucial principle of our belief? So the Rambam discusses this in Hilchos Tshuva, in the beginning of Parak Vav. And the truth is, the Rambam's position is one that we can very much understand. The Rambam addresses here that this isn't really about choosing a path at this point. This isn't about the decision to be a tzaddik or about a rasha. That this is talking about somebody who's already chosen his path, and about the question of whether he will be able to save himself from the consequences of his decision. So the idea that you can decide whether you're going to be righteous or not, so that's certainly the case, but the idea that everyone should always have the opportunity to do tshuva, the idea that there's always going to be the possibility for somebody to turn things around, so that's not necessarily a given. That's a gift, the notion of tshuva. And one could argue, especially, that it's quite the opposite. And this is what you find in the language of the Rambam, that just as we would say that it's unfair to take away somebody's free will, it's unfair to punish somebody if they don't have the ability to do otherwise, if they're forced to do the wrong thing, it's equally unjust, it's equally unfair that if somebody chooses to do the wrong thing, and then they can just snap their fingers and reverse course, that's also unjust. That's also not fair. They should pay the price for these wrong decisions. And this is related to a concept that Rav Dessler, much more recently in the Michta of Milyo, articulated the notion of the Nekudas HaBechira, that you know, we start off with a certain point along the graph of where, along a spectrum of where we can make decisions. The idea that we have free will, it's only true within a certain range of choices. It's always going to be influenced by a context. It's always going to be influenced by the setting that we're in and the choices that we've already made. And once we make certain decisions, we limit the possibilities that we have. And then it's going to be harder to make different decisions. So that's the nature of reality. You call this the Nekudas HaBechira. The Nekudas HaBechira starts at one point and it changes throughout our lives. And the Tashbetz also has comments along these lines. As one has natural inclinations, but you also have the freedom to go against them, and then that changes things. So Paro failed to utilize his free will over the course of many opportunities. So ultimately, he lost it. Ultimately, it's not always going to be the case. The Meiri takes this position also in the Chibur HaTshuva, that Paro essentially did this to himself. So now, at this point, so the assumption that he should just be able to say, okay, so I'm going to now take advantage of an opportunity for everything to reverse, that wouldn't be justice. That would be equally unjust, and it's understandable that that's not going to be given to him. So that's, as the Rambam understands it, that's itself more just than the alternative. And you know, the Mishnah tells us in Yuma that there are certain things that stand in the way of tshuva, and one of them is echteva ashuv. A person has the attitude that I'll sin now because I can do tshuva later, so then that gets in the way of tshuva. So the notion is that even though tshuva theoretically should be available for, even though tshuva should be available for people who are genuinely penitent, people who have gone through a legitimate process, but it's not supposed to be something to be manipulated and something that should be too easy or too accessible for those who don't deserve it. That's also a part of justice and fairness, just like free will is in itself. And that's one of the major approaches to this question. Another approach is the approach of the Sefer HaIkarim. Sefer HaIkarim has the idea that here, this was, this hechbariti is libo, this hardening of the heart, is essentially to preserve his free will. Because if Paro were to respond to the Makos and to let the Jews go because of the Makos, so then that would be not his free will. That's essentially being compelled. There's a very interesting discussion to be had along these lines. You know, it's interesting, this is different than the approach of the Rambam. One might be aware of the very often quoted position of the Rambam regarding Gittin. The Rambam says that even though a get has to be given of free will, nonetheless, under the circumstances where a Bezdin is justified in compelling a get, that's still considered to be free will, because when you're forcing him to do it, you're allowing his true will to come out. That everyone deep down wants to do the right thing, just the Yetzirah is getting in the way, so you got to kind of knock away the Yetzirah. So here, it's kind of coming from the opposite. It's saying that the real free will of Paro was clearly to enslave the Jews. Paro wanted to keep the Jews locked up and to be cruel to them. So if he was going to let them go now because he's being fishmated by the Makos, so then that would have been an expression of not his free will. It would have been like he's being whipped, or even more so, even more than if he's being whipped, or even more, let's say, than somebody taking an attitude out of Yira. If somebody has an attitude that he doesn't really want to do Avodas Hashem, but he does so because he's afraid of Onshin, so we call that Yira Shamayim. That's a positive thing, even though it's not necessarily the highest Madreka. But here it's less than that. He's mamish being beaten down to the ground until he can't endure it anymore. So then you could argue that's what's not free will. The Maharal in his Tzivos Olam writes that the tshuva is, the whole notion of tshuva is because a person should be able to claim that when they sinned, it wasn't the real them. It was something external that got in the way, like the Gemara has, it was also a recent Daf Yomi, the Gemara has in the beginning of Brachos, the expression we say that Rizoneinu lasos Rizoncha, that our will really is to do God's will, but the Yitzhahara gets in the way. So we say that it's not really us when we're sinning, there's something getting in the way. The Balatanya talks about it at length. So here, it's the opposite. So it's Paro, really his real Ratzon is to sin, and if the Makos would have forced him to release the Jews, that would have been the artificial. So the strengthening of his heart to be able to resist the Makos is not a taking away of his free will, it's allowing his actual free will to come forward. It's a fascinating question in general, how much the role of circumstances can be blamed and where exactly that fits in. Rav Moshe has the tshuva, which you could say is somewhat of a liberal tshuva as far as politics are concerned, as far as a theory of crime. And this is also Daf Yomi. People are holding in Daf Yomi. This was Daf Yomi about 2.5 weeks ago. That the Gemara has on Daf Yud in Brachos. Gemara has a story about Rav Meir and Beruya. That Rav Meir was anguished by some people, and he davened that they should die. And his wife, Beruya, was a very wise woman. She said, "You shouldn't daven that they should die. You should daven they should do tshuva." And she ended up being right. So the problem is when the Farshim asked, when Moshe has a tshuva about this, that how could you daven that somebody else should do tshuva? We say, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz meyira shamayim, that everything is in the hands of heaven except for yira shamayim, that your decision to do the right thing, so that's up to you. It's about free will. You can't daven that somebody else should do tshuva. That's like asking God to take away their free will. It's up to the individual if they want to do tshuva or not. So it's a big discussion. The Chazon Ish has a discussion about this, what exactly that means. So Rav Moshe's tshuva suggests that sometimes people sin because of circumstances. Sometimes people get involved in crime because of poverty, because of things that are pushing them in that direction. So you should daven that those circumstances should alleviate, that whatever it is that's pushing them to a life of crime, that should soften, and they shouldn't feel the need to act that way. It's a fascinating perspective. And then there's another approach to this whole issue, which says that essentially this is an exception, that it's true that individuals have free will, but as Ben Yonah and the Ralbag and others apply here, that we have to assume that world leaders and kings are in a different category, say, Lev Malachim Vesarim B'yad Hashem, like that, that when we're talking about decisions that impact history and impact world events, so then those kinds of decisions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervenes because this impacts the whole world, and it's not subject to the same parameters of free will that you regularly would find by an individual. Rav Schechter often comments with the Gemara in Gittin about the Churban, which may have a similar kind of approach to it, that the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was offered three wishes, was offered three favors, and he didn't respond, "Why don't you just save Yerushalayim and stop this whole Churban?" So one of the answers was, "Meshev Chachamim Achor," that God turns the Chachamim backwards, so to speak, so that they won't say what is otherwise the best answer. And what that seems to suggest is that history requires a certain approach, and therefore, even if you would have said something else, you're kind of forced to say whatever history demands. That's not so much about free will in terms of morality, it's in terms of rationality, in terms of making good decisions. But it's similar just in the sense that the demands of history will sometimes maybe impose themselves on the individual. If the individual is making a decision, it's not just about themselves, but it's about nations, it's about world events. So then that cannot be left to the individual decisions, and there are bigger forces at play. So essentially, you mentioned a few things there, but they basically just broke down into three basic theories about this whole Ichbaratiyas Libo thing. It could be grouped into three theories. One is that free will exists, but eventually it can get lost, and essentially it means free will as far as your decision to choose a path, but it doesn't mean that you always have the opportunity to do tshuva and to undo your past mistakes. That's not a given as far as free will is concerned. Or two, that the Sichbaratzeis Libo is what allowed the free will to express itself, because had Paro responded to the Makos, that would have been the opposite of his free will. Or that kings are different, and that world leaders are in a different position because of their impact on history, and it's assessed through a different lens. Okay, but in any event, so then, as we saw Pasuk Gimel already, so now Pasuk Dalet, so gives the message, and he says, "Ki emo eina tal shalech esami." If you refuse, so now I'll tell you what's going to happen. Hinini mevi machar arbe bigvulecha. I'm going to bring locusts into your borders. So the Netziv says that this idea of it being tomorrow is to give it a little bit of a Derech HaTeva kind of framework. Pasuk later on, the next Aliyah is going to talk about the Ruach Kadim. And he says this is to understand Derech HaTeva is also a part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's tools. But also, some of the Mefarshim point out that this is giving it a more specific framework so that you could understand that this is a part of the Os, that there are locusts all the time. So how do you know that this is coming from Kadosh Baruch Hu's message? So we're giving some specifics, that it's happening tomorrow, it's happening within your boundaries. So that is going to convey that this is the message here. And what's going to happen, V'chisa Asein Ha'aretz, it's going to cover up all the land of Lo Yuchal Liros Asaretz, you're not going to be able to see anything, V'ochal Es Yeser HaPleisa, Es Yeser HaPleita, HaNishares Lachem and HaBarad, V'ochal Es Kol Ha'etz HaTzomeach Lachem and HaSada. And it's going to eat everything that's left over from Barad. And it's also going to eat all the trees, everything that's growing. Rav Zalman Saratskin and those Zayim Otari points out a few times that this also is to kind of hit the point home that you see that it's not just that there's natural disasters here happening, but it's happening with a very careful intent that the Barad spares the produce and they think, okay, see, we're okay. And then the next Makkah takes out the produce, so they shouldn't miss the message here. They shouldn't see how they're being very specifically targeted, and how there is a message that they're supposed to be getting. And the pasuk continues, "Umalu v'atachu v'atei kol v'adachu v'atei kol Mitzrayim." So it's going to fill up the houses, fill up all of your servants. It's going to fill up all of the Mitzrayim. Asholo rov usacha v'avus v'usacha. No one's ever seen such a thing. V'yom hayosam v'adama ad yom hazeh. Anyone's ever seen this in history. It's going to be historic. It's going to be epic. And then Vayifan Vayetzame and Paro, and then they left. So Paro's servants, they're getting very concerned. It says Vayomru Abdi Faro, we love Armasa Yezalana Lamokesh. So how long are we going to have a snare, a stumbling block from this guy? Shalachas Hanoshim Vayavdu Es Hashem Eloheim. Atarim teida ki avdim Mitzrayim. Let them go serve their God. Don't we know already that Mitzrayim is essentially destroyed? Rav Yitzchak Dushinsky in the Maritz, he comments over here that see that there's already now a disconnect between Paro and his advisors, that Paro thought that Moshe was bluffing, because why does God need to send a message to the messenger? He hasn't got the point yet. And the Avadim are saying, no, you're not getting it. You're not getting the point. That for whatever reason, God doesn't want to attach himself to Piranius, whatever it is, but you're letting the country get destroyed here, and you should give in already. You shouldn't keep this resistance. The next pasuk is the next pasuk is the source for the idea that Jews go to Florida. Mia mia hochim. The pasuk says Vayusha v'Moshe v'Aaron v'Paro. So Moshe and Aaron, they go back to Paro. It says Vayomer aleihem, and says to them, okay, l'chu ivdu es Hashem, okay, go worship your God. Miva mia hochim. So who is it who's going? And the idea of him asking this, besides the reference to Florida, so the idea of asking who is it who's going, so the Medrash connects us to the idea, he says, you'll eventually say, Mi Aleb HaRashem, Mi Yochum B'mkom Kodesho. So again, Yossi Tzvi Dushinsky has a comment about this in the Torah's Maritz, says that essentially Paro is saying, you know, you think you Jews are capable of this, it's not so easy to go worship your God, to be standing on such a madrega. You think you're all worthy? You think you're all able to do this? You think you're going to be on a level to be able to stand on Har Hashem? So to that, Moshe responds. Next pasuk, V'yomer Moshe b'nareinu v'ziknenu neilech. You know the song, V'aneinu v'noseinu v'zoneinu v'kareinu neilech. Ki chag Hashem lana. We're all going to go together. We're going to have a feast for our God. We're going to go with the young and with the old, with the women, with the children. We're all going to go together, and we're going to hold each other up. So the response to that point, you don't think we're on the Madrega. The Maharit says that we're going to support each other. We're going to hold each other up, and that's going to be the answer. That's the response. So Vayomer Aleihem. So he says to them, okay, so fine, so let God be with you. And if you want to go, so go with you and your little ones. And I see that it's not so good. I see that there is evil in front of you. So different interpretations what that means, whether it means, as Rashi quotes, the idea that he saw some simon of some kind of a bad thing that awaits them, or others understand that he's telling them that I see that you're actually planning on leaving. It's not just a celebration because you're taking the children also, but essentially he seems to be saying, okay, whatever, it's on your head, so go, so fine. And the last pasuk in the Aliyah says, lo chein, L'chuna ha'gvarim v'yivdu es Hashem ki osa tembevak shem v'yigarish osam b'yis p'nei paro. And they're driven out from Paro's presence. And he says, go the gvarim. So this idea of go the gvarim, as the Medrash suggests, Medrash Lagadol suggests, that it's a sarcastic usage. It's a kind of a funny way of speaking. And the Medrash has a comment. Says, do you see the power of Leitzanus? That because he has this sarcastic treatment of them, so it's going to end up that the whole world is going to be turned around. It's a reference, skipping this makor, going to the next one, the Choshech. The whole world gets turned dark. The whole world gets turned upside down because of Paro's sarcastic attitude here. And perhaps that's a reference, some explain, to the idea that Balei Musar have, that a person who is a let, a person who is sarcastic, a person who is cynical, they're not receptive to anything. They're not able to get any message. They're not able to understand when something is important, when something is meaningful, when something is meant to get through to them. And then, as the Balei Musar say, when a person is cynic, a person is a cynic, a person is cynical, all the Musar in the world is not going to get through. All of the attempts to try to convey a message is not going to have an impact. So that's why the whole world has to get turned upside down. That's why they have to have more makos, they have to have choshech, they have to have makos b'choros, because of this idea of leitzanus. Not like we translate nowadays, leitzanus is a clown. Leitzanus means joking around, in a sense that we have a little more positively nowadays, we hope. But in the language of Chazal, leitzanus is a reference to a cynic, to somebody who is unable to take anything seriously, unable to appreciate the importance of a message, and all of this sails past him until things just get worse and worse. So essentially, that's what he's left with, and that's what needs to happen before the Jews finally are redeemed. Okay, so we will stop here. Wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. It should be only good things.